Models. Ed Donahue, Washington.
I'm Teresa Wersbianska for Pacifica Radio.
Welcome to Africa Now. Today's show features current and continuous aggression against DRC contextualized. Africa Now is next. Welcome to the show. I'm Moise Muntali. The music in the background is Who the Cap Fit by Bob Marley and the Wailers. We play that remembering Bob Marley's birthday on February 6th. He would have turned 80 on that day this year. The show continues to focus and contextualizes the constant aggression against the Democratic Republic of the Congo. The conversations featured dissect the current situation in Goma, DRC, dealing with the M23 takeover and Rwanda's involvement, also Uganda's involvement, the continued external destabilization by the U.S. and other Western countries, the continued neocolonial role of multinational corporations and Western nations who are exploiting the DRC's vast resources, the massive loss of life and plight of the internally displaced people, and more. Guests include Akilimali Chomachoma, who's a journalist in the DRC, and Claude Katabuke, who is the co-founder, executive director of the African Great Lakes Action Network. Also featured are diaspora Congolese voices amplifying demands from the people. First, we'll feature a conversation I had yesterday with Akilimali Chomachoma. Here is the conversation. Akilimali Chomachoma, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Brother Muiza.
Thanks, and thank you for also taking the time out of your busy schedule. Also, just to really, you know, under this hectic and the circumstances, we understand are not the best of situations. And you were in Goma until a few days ago. If you could just talk to us about the current situation in Goma.
Right now, the current situation in Goma is that the town is, as you know, under control of the M23 right now. And they are controlling all the town. The latest update is that because there were so many communication to say that they will come to Goma, to Bukavu after Goma, but they did themselves, the M23, decided itself to stop the fighting in the way to Bukavu in areas like Mukwija, near Nyabibwe, and they say that they will stay there, and because of the humanitarian situation, they will not fight, and they will stay. But it seems like they are trying to, after taking Goma, to reorganize themselves. And because in the war, the M23 lost also some members, some soldiers, and they are trying, and also the war in town, the war in the town of Goma did a lot of things to local population, economically, socially. So many people lost their life. So right now they are trying to reorganize themselves, and for sure after when the M23 will see that it's a better time to engage weapon again, they will have another excuse to engage weapon and to continue taking Congolese territories.
And you mentioned about the humanitarian situation. There are a lot of people who are displaced around Goma. Where have those people gone? Where are the people who you know, they were around in refugee displacement camps around Goma. What has happened to those people?
Some of them, before going out, I spoke to some of them, and some of them decide to return in their villages because they flee the M23 and the Rwanda army. And as soon as in the place where they could be protected, the M23 took that area, they have no chance or no choice. Because their villages, some of them returned in their villages, and others are still in church, in areas, in public areas, and others are only in the street without anything in the street of Goma and in many streets around the town of Goma, and others are also in families, member, and in people of good heart, which are receiving them. But you can see how catastrophic can be that situation.
And you were also in Goma before. I mean, you were around in Goma. And now, if you could just talk to us about where you've gone to and how you had to leave that situation.
Because me, I'm a journalist, and I did a lot of work in DRC to try to explain what is going on, and to try to explain who is actors and which actors are doing what. And in that period, I really cover many atrocities did by local groups, and also by the Congolese army, and also by the M23 with the support of Rwanda. But after taking Goma, I realized that I could not be safe in that area, and I decided to fly to see as a war, and to try to be in a neighborhood country. I will not say its name in the interview, but then to still covering what is going on in my country.
And how long was ago was that when you left Goma?
It took me 3 days. 3 days, because I moved from my town to another town. I spent 1 day to reach another town, and after 1 day, I reach also another town, and I stay there like for 2 days, and after I reached another town, and finally cross the border. It were too risky and very dangerous. There are no roads in some areas where I flee. Sometimes I'm using motorbike. Even the motorbike I have to walk by myself and wait the motorbike somewhere else. And after some times I'm taking a taxi. It were really difficult, but finally, I can't say that right now I'm safe, but I can say that I have more chance to be safe and to still doing my job as a journalist where I am.
Yeah, we just pray that you stay safe, and I know you do all the great work of covering the situation there, and this must be very troubling, and it must be extremely difficult circumstances as right now as we speak. And when you were when you left, and also now, have you been able to find out what is the situation in Goma? Is there any resistance from the Congolese army? Is there still fighting taking place in the area?
No, right now in Goma, there is no fight. There is no fight because the M23 with the Rwanda army stopped that. But right now, it's for people, the economic and humanitarian situation. But the current situation is that there is no fight until now, but a bank didn't still open. The airport of Goma, we don't know when it will really open. And also there are also some people which are flying Goma by crossing the border between Goma and Gisenyi in Rwanda, right, these days. And also that school and other public activities are still closed. Before yesterday, on Sunday, there is some church which opened, but some of them could not really work because of IDPs, people, displacement people, which were in the church and around, and some of them cancelled their meeting, and that is officially.
So what are the most pressing needs of Congolese right now, and how are they viewing like the mediation efforts from the regional countries around them?
Yes, thank you so much for this question. You have to know that for that question, the President Tshisekedi have the meeting with the President Kagame, the President of Rwanda, this Saturday in Tanzania, in a special meeting to talk about DRC very soon, but we don't know exactly what will be the solution which they will suggest. We still hope that it will be a chance, like many mainstream are saying, it's the latest chance of peace. Because they were supposed to meet last time in Luanda, in Angola, but one day before, the President Kagame canceled it, and we hope that the President Tshisekedi and the President Kagame will finally meet and try to solve this situation, because the humanitarian situation is going very bad, and the Congolese army, the M23, the Rwanda army, are losing also their soldiers, and this problem have to be solved to protect the population. And main the important thing is to maintain the DRC as a country and to not divide it.
And finally, before we go, what message are you sending to the rest of us here in the United States, particularly, but also in the African continent? What message would you like to have people hear and understand?
What I can tell you is to take more information to truth sources, and to try to be informed about what is going on, to try as much as we can to solve, to give the maximum of support and help to people, and to make much noise about what is going on in DRC, because mainstream media are not covering it like expected, and with their perspective, and this is unbelievable for Congolese. Try to make more noise about what is going on. Try to help as you can to put pressure to your government, because it's your government which are sending those group and those military to come to fight in the way to get resources, critical resources from the Western industries, and try to solve this and try to make much noise as possible. And please try to inform you to the right sources, because if you inform you to the wrong, from the wrong sources, you will have a bad perspective of this war. This is not an ethnic war. This is not a special war about some people which are in need of stability. It's an economic war to take natural resources from Congo by killing Congolese people.
Akilimale Choma, thank you very much for being on the show under these very, very difficult circumstances, and we wish you safe travels and all the best as you continue to amplify the situation in the DRC.
Thank you so much, and thank you for this interview. And we keep doing what we can to try to inform the world about what is going on. And we keep asking to the world to try as the best they can to solve this problem, because it's not a local problem, it's an international issue.
Akilimale, stay safe.
Asante, thank you so much.
Asante sana. And that was a conversation with Akilimale Choma, who is a journalist in the DRC. And it's part of the show's focus and contextualization of the constant aggression against the Democratic Republic of the Congo, DRC. The music in the background is Tres Imboli by Franco and TPOK Jazz. Next, we feature a conversation I had yesterday with Claude Gatebuke, who is the co-founder and executive director of African Great Lakes Action Network. Here is the conversation. Claude Gatebuke, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Mwiza. Glad to be back.
And thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us. First, before we get into the weeds of the issue, I want you to dissect the history of aggression on the DRC, because people are coming into the middle of this story. But this is a long aggression that's taking place.
Yes, this goes way back. The invasion of the Congo was almost 30 years ago in 1996, but it goes back to 1980-81 when Yoweri Museveni, the president of Uganda, lost an election in Uganda and started a war. For a five-year war, committed lots of atrocities, including sexual violence and many other things. And some of his soldiers were exiled Rwandans, that included Rwanda's president, Paul Kagame. In 1986, Yoweri Museveni won. And after he won, the 4 years later, he helped those exiled Rwandans who were part of Uganda's military. By the way, when they invaded Rwanda, by the way, when the invasion of Rwanda happened, Paul Kagame was in the U.S. at Fort Leavenworth studying as a Ugandan officer. So this war led by Paul Kagame lasted 4 years with major, major atrocities, you name. You know, I mean, all the horrors of atrocities that you can name, amputations, massacres, gathering people and killing them with hand weapons, you know, all kinds of just major horrible atrocities committed by the rebel group called the RPF. And this RPF is now the party in power in Rwanda. When Paul Kagame, from 1990, the war took place, and it led to the genocide in 1994, the Rwandan genocide. The genocide ended when the RPF won that war and took over power in Rwanda. So Paul Kagame has been in power in Rwanda, de facto in power in Rwanda for the last 30 years. And again, his history goes back to Uganda. His history of invasions and fighting and just belligerence, violent acts goes all the way back to the 80s in Uganda. And obviously, Paul Kagame was exiled because of Rwanda's historical issues with, you know, some of it due to colonialism, some of it due to domination, there was a revolution in 1959 that exiled him. So now, fast forward 2 years after the genocide in Rwanda, Paul Kagame was the vice president of Rwanda, but in charge of the military. They invade the Congo with the pretext of going after those who committed the genocide, the horrific genocide of 1994 that took 1 million lives of Rwandans. When that happened, during that time, the international community got behind Paul Kagame. It has been since that time. By the way, it wasn't just Paul Kagame's army that invaded Congo. It was also Yoweri Museveni's army that invaded the Congo. And so for the last 30 years, the Congo has been invaded and occupied by Rwandan and Ugandan troops that have changed names, basically, they've changed names, you know, with a variety of acronyms. And those acronyms have led to the latest acronym or naming, which is the M23. But the M23 is one of a long list of acronyms used by these, I don't call them rebels, because what is happening in Congo is a war of aggression. It's an invasion of territorial integrity by both Uganda and Rwanda. Now, it's also not just a local issue of, I know that there is always a tendency to try to frame it as a local Congolese issue with groups that are trying to liberate themselves from tyranny. That is not correct. And what drives the invasion of Congo is access to the resources in the Congo. Lots of Western countries, multinationals, lots of Western multinationals are plundering the Congo. They're pretty much taking resources out of the Congo, enslaving Congolese people. And what is needed in order for them to access those mines is they have to displace people. And what Paul Kagame and Yoweri Museveni have done for them is basically serve as local mercenaries or local plantation managers who allow them to go in and displace people, set up those mines, and also transport the mines out of there. So that's the driving factor of this war. It's also, one of those things where it serves white supremacy really well to have the conflict looking like a black on black crime, where you basically have Africans fighting Africans. But at the end of the day, what really happens is Rwanda and Uganda are financed and militarily trained, and they get military aid, they get economic support, they get political backing and diplomatic cover from the US, the UK, France, the European Union, and others. And that is in return for them basically being their mercenaries on the ground, not only in Congo, but also in other parts of the world, including currently in Mozambique, in Central African Republic, and previously in Haiti.
Thank you very much, Claude, for that contextualization of the situation in the Democratic Republic of Congo and the aggression that's been continuously going on that it just didn't happen recently. And this is something it brings to mind what we just heard from Akilimali Chamachoma in the DRC. He's a journalist from the DRC. And as you heard in his conversation, he said that this conflict is about minerals, that they're using the conflict to clear out people so that they can get access to minerals. If you could expand a bit of what you said about the connections, particularly the U.S. As well as multinational corporations in particular, who are behind the mining issues in the DRC.
Basically what Akilimali showed is the human cost to multinationals accessing the resources in the Congo. Congo is the richest country in terms of natural resources, with $24 trillion worth of resources under its soil. And there is a scramble for the Congo. There's always been a scramble for the Congo, but the tech revolution, the green revolution, everything that's happening today depends on a lot of resources that come out of Congo. I mean, the Teslas, you know, the electric cars, they depend on resources coming out of the Congo. And so multinationals also like to pay fair prices. They would rather exploit the people. And these local mercenaries, like I said, the Rwandan and Ugandan military, especially in the Congo, serve to open those and to make those resources available for them by killing Congolese people in masses. Since the invasion of Congo, since the invasion in 1996 by Rwanda and Uganda, more than 6 million people have died, and the majority are children under the age of 5. So they kill the people, they displace the people. There's more than 7 million displaced people in Congo. And basically they traumatize them. And the people, when the people leave, then, you know, either there are already some mines in the area, or they set up mines. And then once they do the mining, they also pretty much enslave the local population by using child labor, paying them very little, if at all, working in horrible, horrible, difficult and dangerous conditions. And then they transport those resources through Rwanda and Uganda. Now, the role of the U.S. has been pretty much a funder and a protector for the invaders of Congo, because they're both of them are allies of the U.S. And they are pretty much the biggest U.S. allies in that region. Rwanda and Uganda, Paul Kagame and Museveni both are, and they serve U.S. interest in that whenever they need them to go and pretty much lay out, you know, put their bodies on the line for, you know, in order to get paid, you know, they'll send their troops to places that the U.S. and other Western countries would rather not send their troops. For example, when Rwandan troops were in Darfur, The Western troops didn't want to go to Darfur. You got Ugandan troops in other places like Somalia, for example. And now you got Rwandan troops securing oil reserves in Mozambique for France. So it's the US has been a financier, if you will, for these regimes in terms of aid. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I believe Rwanda received like $1 billion in recent years from the Biden administration, which the Trump administration had only, I think, you know, given him like 100 million. I have to double check those numbers, but it's something exponentially different when it comes to the type of support they get. And they also get military training and military equipment and things like that. And these are two of the world's poorest countries, both Uganda and Rwanda. And yet they're able to wage these type of wars in the Congo because they have that kind of support from the US. Additionally, they finance themselves through the plundering of the resources in the Congo. But the role of the US has been for political backing, support, diplomatic support, military support, and economic support for their two allies that have invaded the Congo and are securing resources for multinationals, which are, you know, there is a lot of Canadian companies, a lot of Swiss companies, a lot of American, British, French, and others that are exploiting the Congo.
And that's Claude Katebuke. He is the co-founder and executive director of African Great Lakes Action Network. And we're looking at the situation in the Democratic Republic of Congo, contextualizing the current and continuous aggression at the DRC. Now we come to the M23. If we could expand a bit more on their connection to Rwanda, particularly from your vantage point, since you're from that area.
Let me put it this way. Every chicken and every goat in Congo and Rwanda knows that the M23 in Uganda, that the M23 is the Rwandan and Ugandan military. They are part of the Rwandan military and Ugandan military. There are also things that you can logically look at without even going into, I'll go into the local context, but and the evidence, but without even that, we have seen rebel groups in Africa, in other parts of the world. Usually you'll see some guys wearing, an old red Michael Jordan jersey among a group of others, some people wearing flip-flops and a variety of things. The M23 looks like a conventional army, does not look like a rebel group, does not look like a typical rebel group. They have all this equipment, including all the, goggles and just heavy military equipment. That is not your usual rebel group in Africa or any other part. In general. So that's one. That's just, what is the word I'm looking for? I mean, simple logic. Secondly, you have many Rwandan troops who've been captured fighting as part of the so-called M23. Also, every time somebody surrenders to the M23, they end up in Rwanda. How is that? If it's not Rwanda's military that's doing it, how is it that when people surrender or they're captured or whatever, they're in Rwanda? You know, so that's another thing. The capture, when it comes to like certain towns getting captured, there's no way you can capture certain parts of Congo without either going through Rwanda or Uganda, like the Bunagana town, for example, the border town with Uganda. It had to be Ugandan troops doing it. No rebel group is going to operate there without the consent or complicity of the local military. Same with Rwanda. I mean, it's like you walk, basically it's places where you can walk on one side you're in Rwanda and on the other side you're in the Congo. The other thing is, it's not even just now, but in previous years, it was shown through UN groups of experts reports that General James Kabarebe, General Charles Kayonga, General Jacques Nziza, all who are Paul Kagame's advisors and generals, were providing logistical training and support in Rwanda. Now, going to the M23, now going to the local context in Rwanda today, they're actually like in schools, children are being recruited from Rwanda to go to, and in some cases, forcibly recruited into going to fight with the M23. So this is all, it's not a major secret. It's not even hidden. It's just something that it seems the media and the international community are refusing, they refuse to acknowledge it for what it is, but it's the Rwanda military and the Uganda military going into Congo.
And finally, before we go, do you trust the unilateral declaration of a ceasefire by the M23?
No, I don't. This has always been, this has always been kind of a method that both Museveni and Kagame use. They'll fight, take over territory, and then declare ceasefire. They do that all the time, just so that they can secure the areas that they have taken over. This is more to secure and prepare for further offensive. And Kilimali also said it. He said that they were regrouping. That's usually what happens. And they'll stop, stall, negotiate, and then fight again. Stop, stall, negotiate, and then take over other places, commit more atrocities. This is also, to give themselves time to pretty much terrorize the local population into submission. But I don't trust it at all. I don't trust the talks that they have because they never, hold up on their talks. This ceasefire is more to just buy themselves a little bit of time.
Claude Gadebouge, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you, thank you.
And that was a conversation with Claude Gadebouge, who is the co-founder and executive director of African Great Lakes Action Network. And that was part of the show's focus and contextualization of the constant aggression against the Democratic Republic of the Congo, DRC. Early on, you heard the conversation with Akilimali Chomachoma, who is a journalist from the DRC. The music in the background is Gurima by Chinoiso Marere. You're listening to Africa Now on WPFW, 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C., your jazz and justice station. Now we're going to feature diaspora Congolese voices amplifying demands from the people. They were part of a recent demonstration at the Embassy of Rwanda presented by Congolese Community of Washington Metropolitan, CCWM, Friends of the Congo, and others. You'll now hear portions of speeches by Niles Kinwani, who is board director and immigration coordinator for the Congolese Community of Washington Metropolitan, CCWM, and ELVI of the Future of Congo organization. First, you'll hear Niles Kinwani, followed by ELVI.
thank you for joining us today. My name is Niels Kinwani, your brother from the Congolese community here in the DC area. And as Paul mentioned, we are here because of the crisis posed upon our country, the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Now, we are here because we have a special message in front of the Rwandan embassy, because we have a special message for them. And we hope that they can hear us.
They can.
So the conflict in the DRC, I think we've seen in the past couple of weeks the escalation of violence. But I wanna remind you of the magnitude of the humanitarian crisis now in the DRC. And some of us here are victims of that war. Last week, a family member, my wife's uncle, was killed in the crossfire in Goma. So this is very personal to a lot of us here. And we have a special message to Mr. Kagame, the president of Rwanda. Enough is enough. This war has lasted for over 30 years, one of the longest armed conflicts in modern history. Not only that, but this is the deadliest armed conflict since World War II. Over 6 million people dead, killed, and some of them are our family members. And Mr. Kagame has decided to pursue a war of aggression against the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Now, Paul mentioned the M23 and the Rwandan forces. They're not separate, they're one.
Yes.
And that's why we are here to make it clear to the US, to the international community, and to Mr. Kagame. If he thinks he can continue to hide behind the M23, it's not gonna work. We wanna make sure that everybody, everyone knows and understands that message. Now, to make matters worse, Mr. Kagame is using foreign aid to pursue that war of aggression in the DRC. As you probably know, Rwanda receives a lot of funding from the US government. Some of us here are US citizens. This is our money. This is the money from our taxes that is sent to Rwanda, and President Kagame is using that money to kill the people of the DRC. Enough is enough, and we want that to stop today. And that's our message to Mr. Kagame. We, US citizens, Congolese Americans, we're not going to allow our government, the US government, to send money, funding to Mr. Kagame so that he can use it to kill the Congolese people. We want that to end today.
Hi everyone, my name is Elvi and I am a member of the Future of Congo, and I'm here today as a Kinwaz. I'm here today as Mwanamboka. I'm here today as a Black person, as a lover of justice, and as a person who demands liberation for all marginalized and all oppressed people around the world. And one thing I want to say first and foremost, for anyone here who is continuing to talk for and advocate for Congo, this is not a crisis. It's not just a humanitarian relief issue. This is a genocide. Rwanda is committing genocide in Eastern Congo, and we have to start using precise language. We have to start using accurate language when we are talking about this. It's not simple. It's not just about, oh, there's a crisis going on, there's a conflict going on, there's an issue in Congo, people need aid, people need relief. This is a genocide. This is immoral. Something like this should not be happening. And for those of you who may not know the numbers, there's a flyer over there that I made. Over 6 million people killed in a span of 30 years. Over 8 million people displaced. And I'm saying over because these numbers are not accurate. In displacement camps in Goma, for anybody who's ever been there, for people who are from Eastern Congo who know the reality, there are many people living in displacement camps who are not registered. So that means the numbers are not accurate. If you combine the numbers that I just gave you, that is more than the population of this embassy behind us. That is more than the population of Rwanda. How dare they? How dare they go into a country and kill people and displace people and cause disruption all over Congo? No matter where you are, we feel the effects of this. Like Jessica said, we are a society, we are a population that is traumatized. We have all felt it. My family had to leave Congo because of the second war. We have been living for generations with this. There are families that are born into displacement camps. It is their life, it is their reality. They don't know if they'll ever leave. They don't know anything else but that. That's not acceptable. I don't understand how we allow this to happen. The entire world should be ashamed. We should be ashamed as human beings to allow this to happen. It is a shame and it is a stain on the world. It is a stain on this country. Behind me, this embassy behind me should be closed. They should be in fear. They should be Rwanda. Rwanda should be ashamed. Rwanda should not lift its head at the UN. They should not be able to lift their head. They should not be able to walk into that building. They are breaking international law. They are committing war crimes. And this, the soil that we're on here, the United States of America, the EU, Uganda, there is a list. France, Belgium. There are so many countries right now that are eating well. They are sleeping well. They are building wealth. They are prospering. And they go around and they say, we're so developed, we're so much better. Yeah, look at the bottom of the supply chain. Those people who are, what is it called? Artisanal mining? Huh? That's not legitimate. They give it a pretty name so that you can think it is legitimate. It's not. And these big mining companies that are right next to them, they're just as corrupt. The Glencores, the big top mining companies owned by China, they're just as corrupt. They're committing exploitation. They're allowing for child labor. They're allowing those things. So please, I ask of everyone here, for the folks who showed up, how you came to be here, if it was through knowing a Congolese person, being Congolese yourself, being interested in an advocate for liberation and for justice, how whatever pathway you took, please make more noise. Please, we have to make more noise. I don't know how we can do it, but we need to do it. We have given, as Congolese people, we have given everything to this world. We are bleeding. We are being drained. We are tired. We are hurt. We have given everything to this world. What are we gonna get back? When are we going to get back what we deserve? When? Someone has to answer for this. But just like now, all we hear is silence. All we hear is silence when we ask these questions. At our platform, at the Future of Congo, we went to Goma just 2 weeks ago. Just 2 weeks ago, we were there. We could have been stuck there. And who would know if we would have made it back? And when we were there, we spoke to children, we spoke to mothers, people who have had their, I don't even know if I can describe to you the conditions of displacement camps. And I know the people who are from Eastern Congo, like my sister here, I can't even imagine what they have seen and what they have gone through growing up and the pain that they're feeling right now. There are members of our team that we're having a hard time getting in communication with them. If I could show you all the realities, you can go on our platform at the Future of Congo, on Instagram, on TikTok. We show you interviews. We show you the conditions of the camps. This is unacceptable. To treat Congolese people in this way, to treat us as if we're nothing, it is unacceptable. And I am tired of people saying that they don't know when the information is out there. Take self-accountability. Learn. Do your research. Spread the research. We know how to use the internet. We know that we're in the age of technology. These platforms that we have, they're our weapons. They're our way to fight back. It's easy for us to look back into the past and look at our great liberation leaders, to look at Patrice Lumumba, to look at Malcolm X. They didn't have TikTok. They didn't have technology. They didn't have the internet to spread information vastly simultaneously to different corners of the world. They wrote letters. They wrote columns. You know how long that took to print and publish? I don't even know. Yet look what they were able to do with the little resources that they had at the time.
And you just been listening to Diaspora Congolese Voices amplifying demands from the people. They were part of a recent demonstration at the Embassy of Rwanda presented by the Congolese community of Washington Metropolitan, Friends of Congo, and others. You just heard Elvi of the organization The Future of Congo. Earlier, you heard Niles Kinwani, board director and immigration coordinator of the Congolese Community of Washington Metropolitan, CCWM. And the music in the background of the Congolese Diaspora Voices was Get Up, Stand Up by Bob Marley and the Wailers. The music in the background is 96 Degrees in the Shade by Third World, remembering the lead singer of Third World, Bunny Ruggs' birthday, which is February 6th. That's it for African Hour for today. I'm your host, Mwiza Muntali. Up next is Headline News, followed by Shanana with Zain Al-Amin, looking at issues in Northern Africa and the Middle East, particularly as it pertains to the plight of Palestinians. And after that is Sophie's Parlor, the Women's Collective, which is followed by The Browder File with Tony Browder. And that's followed by Black Agenda Radio with Margaret Kimberly, which is followed by Kombit Lakai with Eugenia Charles, which looks at issues in Haiti. Check out Africa Now on Facebook and on X, formerly Twitter. That's at Africa Now Online. Also, Africa Now is archived on iTunes Podcast and on SoundCloud. Search under Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. That's Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. Thanks to Africa Now's executive producer and co-host James Pope. And thanks to our engineers, Michael Nicella and Kalia Chapman. And thanks to our research fellow volunteers, Chanda Kozer and Fona Ngonda, and our Africa World Now Project Collective of Dr. Tasmin Siddiqui, Dr. Keisha Khan Perry, Dr. Josh Myers, and Kurt Erderson. And thanks to the entire team here at WPFW. And to you for joining us. Continue to support all the great programs on WPFW the next 2 weeks during our Winter Pledge Drive. We're going to leave with a closing song entitled Haki, which means justice, by All Stars of Goma, North Kivu, in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, DRC. Thank you. Have a great day. Have a great week. And stay safe.
Sauvons l'Afrique de l'injustice. Que notre terre retrouve ses astuces. L'égalité de sexe, l'indifférence des rangs sociaux. Que la justice soit notre emblème.
Si c'est mes camarades, c'est assez na c'est ma camarade musique. Qui nous guide à tout, n'a pas de vue d'ailleurs haki. Qui n'a pas vu que l'eau boit, pas n'a ni pas sa maki. Nongea, n'a pas sa biki. N'a pas voulu manga dame, wanga pu wani ukum. C'est pas beaucoup qu'on se waki, on va pour mettre pas sous. C'est na rosa, kutu rosa, kuri pa kisas. C'est pas beaucoup qu'on se waki, on va pour na shika bunduki.
Wani kuma chaf, kumana na roja sura. Hivi kwa miaka ijayo, nani tutamu papura.
Nina chotaka ni haki, usada kwangu staki, kiongozi miase shimiki. Ona inchi jirani magapi wana tucheka. Kuna tuna zahabu lakini tuanitwa tabu. Nikisema kwane kiflake matakuwa. Hivi walio uwawa nao walisema nini? Wale waliobakia. kuzaliwa nao walisema nini? Damu ya ndugu zangu na kisi iko nalia. Uko wapi? Ya Mungu wa Biblia. Hata mkinua nao mbinguni nitaingia. Damu kuta Lumumba na hisa tanipokea. Hakini haki utaniwa kwa jina haki.
Eso no so tosi mana lobo moto tombola. Droa na misto ya Kongo.
Listen, nongea nao nyasaji ndo kazi zao. Na waza haki zao za watu na zisa.
Wondering how to get WPFW swag in your life? Items that say, I support jazz and justice without saying a word. We've got you covered. Details and browsing at WPFWFM.org. Again, that's WPFWFM.org.
For WPFW News in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin. Here are some headlines. President Trump yesterday declared that the United States should take over Gaza. Speaking alongside Benjamin Netanyahu at a joint press conference, Trump said the U.S. would establish long-term ownership of the Palestinian territory and turn it into, quote, the Riviera of the Middle East, close quote. Trump also reiterated his call for all of Palestinians from Gaza to be displaced to neighboring countries. Asked whether U.S. troops might be sent to help secure Gaza, he said, quote, we'll do what is necessary. If it's necessary, we'll do that, close quote. While Netanyahu praised Trump for his, quote, willingness to think outside the box with fresh ideas, close quote, and in Israel, far-right leaders applauded the scheme, condemnation of the plan was swift in the U.S. and abroad. Arab leaders have already refused calls to take in Palestinians forcibly removed from Gaza, and Saudi Arabia reiterated it will not establish ties with Israel without the creation of a Palestinian state. Here in the U.S., Senator Chris Van Hollen and Representative Rashida Tlaib, both Democrats, described the idea as ethnic cleansing, with Tlaib writing on social media, quote, Palestinians aren't going anywhere, close quote. And on X, Senator Chris Murphy put it this way, quote, he's totally lost it. A U.S. invasion of Gaza would lead to the slaughter of thousands of U.S. troops and decades of war in the Middle East. It's like a bad, sick joke, close quote. In other news, a second federal judge today moved to block President Trump's executive order ending birthright citizenship. The preliminary injunction issued by Maryland Judge Deborah L. Boardman applies nationally and is more permanent than the 14-day temporary restraining order by a federal judge in Seattle that expires tomorrow. U.S. District Judge Deborah Boardman, an appointment of President Biden, argued that citizenship is a national concern that demands a national policy. Her ruling will last through appeal. In today's hearing, Boardman said the order, quote, conflicts with the plain language of the 14th Amendment, contradicts 125-year-old binding Supreme Court precedent, and runs counter to our nation's 250-year history of citizenship by birth, close quote. The case in Maryland was brought by two immigrant rights organizations and five anonymous expecting mothers without permanent legal status. In more news, the Trump administration is putting the majority of employees at the United States Agency for International Development on administrative leave. A new directive sent to all USAID staff globally and posted online stated that the workers must go on leave by Friday at 11:59 p.m. The note ended with, "Thank you for your service." The agency provides humanitarian aid to more than 100 countries and